So let's return now to our agenda, and I believe we are at item 9, which is scheduled as an update from Verisk regarding the firm and its role as the board's investment consultant. I see somewhere on my screen, I saw Scott, there he is in front of me. So unless there's further ado, I'll turn it over to you, Mr. Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was a battle of attrition.
So I will share my screen, but before I do, just a couple of introductory remarks. So this is in response to or follow-up to the last meeting where we had some discussion around some investment policy items that were unresolved. That is the next agenda item today. But it also became apparent, or I became aware, that our role with the board could stand to be clarified. And as part of that, wanted to just give a brief update of the firm as well, since it's been a while since you guys have had a reintroduction to Verisk. So quick firm update, the last slide of which should prompt a discussion about our role with respect to the board and staff. And with that, I will share my screen.
There you go.
Okay, so just kind of jumping into it, our mission statement I won't spend any time on, but some fun facts of the firm. So we've been growing quite a bit since we first started our relationship 6 years ago, and we are now the 13th largest consultant in the nation with $500 billion in assets under advisement. Seems pretty incredible to me, and 155 client relationships. We've got very experienced consulting staff, 23 years of average experience for our consultants. I'm on the low end of that with just 19 years of experience. And we're 100% owned. So while a number of our competitors are public firms, we continue to be shareholder owned and have no interest in changing that. And 90% of our senior consultants are shareholders. So broad ownership across the firm sort of ensures alignment with our clients. And then we invest a lot in research. So we have a public markets research team, a private markets research team, a capital markets research team, and a governance structure that manages all of it that I rely on to bring you recommendations. Some of the milestones in our history, we go back to 1986. We opened a Los Angeles office shortly thereafter. So we've by and large been a sort of a west of the Rockies firm for most of our history. Our current CEO was hired back in 92. He was the 11th member of the firm to be hired. Now we have 86 or 88 folks. And then Shelley Heyer, our president, was hired back in 2000. We started as Wirtz and Associates, some of you may remember, and then Bill Wirtz began to transition his ownership back to other members of the firm, including myself, back in 06. And then he officially retired in 08. It was, a very poignant time for our firm and for me personally. Bill hired me, and he was a great man and established a great culture here. And then around that time, our assets under advisement were passing about $25 billion, so still very boutique-y firm. And then the ownership transition was complete shortly thereafter. Shelley was appointed president, and I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance to meet her, she is just a crackerjack, man. She runs this firm like a Swiss watch, and she's really an amazing leader.
I can attest to her being a crackerjack. I had the pleasure of meeting Shelley during a due diligence visit to your Seattle office, and it was shortly after the fateful call to not give the ball to Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl. And so I made the casual mistake of needling about that, yeah, and found out that that's maybe not a good way to start off a discussion with Shelley. But anyway, it was pretty funny. She's very interesting.
She is, and she is a very powerful woman, and she and I butt heads periodically on our differing views, one of which was just yesterday, and I'm still smarting from that. So I feel your pain, Scott. So we started our relationship with you guys almost exactly 6 years ago. Shortly thereafter, we merged with SIS, a San Francisco-based firm that had a very strong presence in large public funds. And so that kind of put us on the map, so to speak, nationally, and really caused our assets to jump. We had organically grown up to 100 billion, but then with the large public firms, many of which are in the tens of billions of dollars, we just individually, our assets grew substantially overnight. Around that time, we were also starting our strategic partnership business. We hired a group out of the Alaska Permanent Fund, and that group grew to about 18 folks that we then, after several years and some growth, sold to Goldman Sachs. And then we retained the OCIO business, which has been a trend in the industry, but sold our strategic partnership business and the couple of clients that went along to that, which actually was sort of a windfall for us and allowed us to invest even more in our research. And then more recently, we've expanded our ownership to 30 employee shareholders, and we opened a Pittsburgh office. So as I stand here today, we truly have a national footprint. And kind of in speaking of that national footprint, so this map is reflective of our clients, where they exist in our offices. You can see our continued sort of West Coast emphasis, although we continue to expand nationally. Most recently, we picked up Mass Prim as a client in Boston, which was a big win for us. And then two very recent wins that aren't on this map is, it was in the press, probably not in periodicals that you all read, but we picked up Pennsylvania public plan. They were going through some governance issues and hired us to come in and help them straighten that out. And then we also picked up a big win in Illinois, where the downstate police departments are aggregating into a single statewide fund. And we just won that one. We were notified on Friday of last week. So we're thrilled about our growth, and we continue to build out our client base. We build out our client base with the services that we have on offer. And just so you all know, we have consulting, non-discretionary consulting, which is the service that we provide to you guys. We have a specific risk advisory service, and that team has actually been interfacing with your investment office recently as part of their investigation into what services are out there, and also just to kind of help them get a better understanding of all the risk factors associated with your active management in your portfolio. We have a private markets team that operates somewhat like StepStone, your private markets provider. And then we have our outsourced CIO business, which is really a portfolio management business where we take on full discretion for the activity in our client portfolios. This is our team. I won't spend too much here. This is designed to let you know that we are broad and deep and have expertise across all the areas where you need them. And then just sort of with respect to our process, you guys experience our process real time whenever we come to you with an asset allocation review or a manager review. But we look at the problem as a three-legged stool, right? And all of it supporting your enterprise risk tolerance that is very well defined, especially for you guys, and your enterprise objectives, which are also very well defined. So asset allocation, first and foremost, comes out of those asset liability studies and asset allocation reviews we conduct for you. Effective implementation is all about, you know, sort of ensuring that you have the right mix of active versus passive strategies, and in the passive strategies that you are, that the managers fit well together and you have the right people in the right place. And then also around, you know, making sure that the fee loads are favorable to y'all. Any additional revenue opportunities are being taken advantage of. And then opportunity capture is kind of the fun one. That's the one where, you know, these opportunistic investments don't come along very often, but when they do, you want to be able to take advantage of them. So for example, following the global financial crisis back in 2008, 2009, there were some good credit opportunities to be had. You know, we were hoping for more opportunities following the COVID pandemic, but the market snapped back so quickly, there wasn't really time to identify and take advantage of those. But these usually come following big market corrections or market drawdowns. And we have a group of capital markets research folks that are paying attention to that stuff and always looking to take advantage. And then, so that sort of concludes the, you know, reintroduction to Verus. This slide is really designed to illustrate our role with respect to staff and with respect to the board. And so, you know, very clearly, as I wrote over there in the call out caption on the right, our role is to work for the board and to work with staff. So we understand that we are fiduciaries to the board and to the plan participants. And we also recognize that in fulfilling that role, we have to work very closely with staff. So we're the eyes and ears of the board. I have full faith and confidence in your investment staff, having worked with, I think, all of them closely over the years and even more recently. And, you know, you have good staff. I admire and respect them a lot. Now, that said, you know, it's my role to act as your eyes and ears. And if I were to see anything untoward or have any concerns about any activity, you know, I would first go to Tim and say, hey, what's going on here? And see if we could work through it. And then if it wasn't resolved to my satisfaction, I'd go to Gail. And if I couldn't resolve it with Gail, I'd pull the fire alarm and go directly to the board. Now, happily, nothing even close to that has happened in my relationships based on the quality of your staff. But that's sort of the process in terms of eyes and ears of the board. And then, you know, I have a great working relationship, I believe, with your staff. We work closely on many items. But it's good for you to know and understand that we don't always see eye to eye, right? We have our perspectives and our folks have relationships and get information and are looking at different things in our research. And your folks are doing the same thing. And it would be sort of odd if we were always in perfect agreement. The times that we haven't been in perfect agreement, we reconcile through discussion, and virtually always we're able to reach agreement and come to the board with a united front, a united recommendation, a consistent recommendation. There have been times and when we have agreed to disagree and come to the board for discussion and decision. And the one big time when that happened was during the implementation of the functionally focused portfolio. You know, I was more focused on sort of a risk balanced approach, but closer to a traditional sort of peer portfolio. And Tim was more interested in the direction that you guys headed, which we were comfortable with, but not, you know, what wouldn't have been my preference. And it's worked out very well for you. And so we came to the board with those, you may recall, those of you that were in those strategic planning sessions, we came to the board with that difference of opinion. And the board chose to go with its chief investment officer, and it's worked out very well for you. So with that, I'll sort of stop my description of the way I view my role vis-a-vis working for the board and with staff, and see if there's any discussion or questions.
Scott, it's John Phillips. A couple of quick questions or quick items just to ask you to react to or describe. First, the sources of revenue for your firm, and second, how you measure account profitability. For example, in my old consulting years, we measured it against a standard hourly billing rate, hours being charged to the engagement. Whether we were above or below that standard was how we measured it. You may do it very differently, but could you give us some sense of that?
Yeah, you bet. So first to revenue, I'm proud to say that our only source of revenue is the revenue we receive from clients for our advisory services. So that sort of eliminates any conflict relative to taking revenue from investment managers or any other sources. So that's our sole source of revenue. Secondly, to your second question about measuring account profitability, so we don't. When I was in management consulting, we measured it exactly the same as you described, but we are on a retainer basis. And so we've you know, tried time and motion studies in the past, but sort of failed miserably to get to account level profitability. So we have metrics that we measure that are heuristics around level of effort. And we look at those to ensure that we're balanced and not too far out of whack. But our profitability is measured at the firm level.
Okay, thank you.
Are there questions or comments for Scott? It appears not. So carry on.
That concludes this agenda item, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you.